You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today we're going to be talking about stories. I almost said telling some stories, and I hope we will. But really what we're going to be doing is focusing on the use, the utility of stories and storytelling in your business. And joining me to help in this conversation is somebody who knows stories, storytelling, and how it fits into business and marketing incredibly well. She's the host of the Strategic Storytelling Podcast and has been working with businesses on how to incorporate stories into how they position themselves out in the marketplace. Kathy Goodwin, welcome.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Indeed. So I'm browsing through your website in preparation for our conversation today, and you share one of the sort of positioning statements or examples or complaints, as we'll often position it, that we often do in our business, which is that you can't brand like a beer company. And I'm going to tell a quick story, and then we're gonna work around how this actually applies to stories. Very often, we're trying to get a business to think about how to position themselves out in the marketplace. And we are looking at what they're doing, and they're spending money as if they had the same budget that Bud Light has, right? $300 million a year is what Bud Light apparently spends, the last time I looked this up, on their marketing. And it's a very different approach to marketing than you or I would recommend typical small or locally focused businesses ought to apply. And so we talk about this constantly. So I was super excited when I saw why you can't brand like a beer company on your website. Explain a little bit more.
Oh, I would love to. A lot of times people tell me they go to a webinar or a seminar in person. They're a small company. Actually, a financial advisor told me this. He went to a seminar on how to be a brand as a financial advisor. And they said, well, look at what Budweiser is doing. Look at what Nike is doing. And you can't. And there are several reasons for that. First of all, when Coca-Cola is branding, what is Coca-Cola selling? Chemicals in water. What is Budweiser selling? Chemicals in water. What is Nike selling? Clothes, cloth with a logo on it. What are you selling as a small business? You are selling yourself. You are the brand. So when you are Nike or you are Coca-Cola, you have to make up a persona or personality. In fact, when I was teaching, one of the exercises that we had was to say, okay, suppose this brand were a person and you were meeting them at a party, what would they be like? And of course, you make it up. This is something the ad company has developed for Pepsi or Coke or any of these other companies. So that's a created imaginary personality and style. You do not make one up. You are the brand. Now, you do intentionally choose the way you market, which is very important. It's not quite the same as a brand, as a persona or your own individual personality. In fact, it's perfectly realistic. I mean, we all do this. You don't talk to your customers the way you talk to your grandmother, or if you're into religion, the pastor of your local church, or your best friend when you're having a beer together. You have a different personality. So that's fine. But you have a personality, a persona when you talk to your customers. And when you deal with your customers and your clients, especially clients, it's very, very important to be consistent and have a consistent personality, a consistent style. And you don't make it up. It's not like Budweiser saying, well, here's a party where people are having a good time. It's you coming out of where you are, how you want to relate to your customers. So that's one important point. Another point is the point of sale. When Budweiser brands, when they have their store, I love Budweiser commercials. I love those cute little puppies. But they're not intending for you to click on a link and buy right now. They're not saying click on a link now and get more information. They're trying to imprint an image in your mind. So your subconscious mind will pick it up. And when you're in a bar or a store, you're going to see Budweiser. And subconsciously, you're going to remember that commercial with the cute little puppies. That's a very different mental process than when you are selling yourself as a financial advisor or as a lawyer. So those are very different kinds of approaches. When you do that, you're very different in the way you sell and in the customer's buying process. And that's why you need to think differently when you brand as a small business, especially if you have a service.
So, okay, you've used the word brand several times here. And I think there's kind of two different ways that we in the marketing world will refer to brand. You're referring to it in terms of the consistency, the positioning, the way that a business shows up, as opposed to the visual branding aspect of those companies as well, right? So when somebody says to me, what's the Nike brand? Well, we think of the Nike swoosh. If we talk about the Coca-Cola brand, and so that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a deeper and broader use of that term. And I wonder if you can dig into that a little bit deeper, because I understand that from the work that you do with clients, you actually, sort of expand the application of brand and story together.
Yeah. Well, I think that the visual brand may be more important to some of these companies that sell tangible consumer products, like the Nike with the swish or Tide with its logo. But when you're thinking about a lawyer, you might think of a brand subconsciously because their letterhead always has the same brand on it, but it's not what you think of first. I mean, when you think of a lawyer, you think about what they're going to be like to work with. You think about what their story is, their message. So I think what I like to say with clients is that it's really more about your story than about your logo. In fact, with a service business, and I'm probably preaching to the choir here, it's nice to have a logo, but it's not the first and most important thing you need, because it's not what people are going to take away from this. They're going to remember, say, your story. Like, okay, like my lawyer is a good example. Like I have a lawyer I've used for writing a will and things like that. And I have no idea what his brand is. I'm pretty sure he paid for a logo and I'd recognize it on his site. But what I think of is, oh, okay, he's the guy who has a picture with his dog. He's the guy who really cares about his customers. He served in the military and he worked with soldiers. He really cares about his clients. And here are some of the ways he does that. That's the brand that's the message of his entire site. That's the brand. He's very, very good at this. And in fact, it's one reason I chose to work with him, is that I figure someone who has such a good website and good messaging has got to be pretty smart behind the scenes. And he was. He's a really good lawyer. But a lot of people don't think that way. I mean, with Coca-Cola, when you see it on the shelf, you're going to go for that image. With Nike, when you see it even on Amazon, you're going to go for that image. But you don't see professionals the same way. They're not all lined up on a shelf. You're seeing them one at a time on their website. Even if you meet them in person nowadays, we're in the 21st century, you're going to go to their website before you hire them. You're not going to just have someone say, maybe you meet someone at a party and they say, oh, he's a great lawyer. You're going to go to their website. You're not going to just take that for granted. And you're going to want to know what they're like. What's their story? What's their message?
So this estate planning attorney that you just mentioned, right? You told a few little pieces of the story that I imagine the website communicates. You pointed out something about his background, what he had done, the way that he cares for clients, or the way that he relates to others, which were all told through something that you observed either on his website or when you had your first meeting with him however you encountered him. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how, we've been using this word story. It's not necessarily a once upon a time story, but it is a story that is one that you can dimensionalize, right, in your mind as you were talking about the attorney. I had pictures conjured up in my head of, oh, I think I understand who this person is a little bit better than just a guy who writes wills.
Yes, yes. And he's very, even when he writes a will, he's very detail-oriented. Every treats every customer really like royalty. It's really, really good. And that comes through. Now, we talk the way we talk about business stories, one of my key themes is, and I think most people don't think about it enough this way, a business story is not a bedtime story. It is not a fairy tale. I don't think it's like most movie stories. A business story starts with a purpose. Why are you telling this story? And how does that story communicate your message? Or I mean, I use the word brand pretty loosely. I'm not as probably as precise as I should be. But we talked earlier about the different archetypes that people have. This is a framework that I have created for small business, service-based business owners. So what I have found, I have yet to find a business that does not fit into one of these five archetypes. And I have a free guide people can get if they want to learn more and find their own. But your archetype is the foundation or the container of your brand. It really, I hate to use the word dictates, but it really influences or should influence everything you send out, everything mm-hmm. you say, every story you tell. Once you know your archetype, it's much easier to market, to write copy, because you know the tone you should take. So, for example, my lawyer that I mentioned is what I would call a passionate advocate, which is something really reserved for lawyers. It's a very dangerous archetype because it means that I'll go, your message, your promise, your brand is, I will go the extra mile for you. And lawyers know how to draw boundaries. If you don't have that boundary, the downside of a passionate archetype is you'll be getting calls at 3 a.m. And there are people who have done that. They've positioned themselves inappropriately as a passionate advocate. So that's why his whole website is about how he cares about people. And he doesn't talk about his background just to say, oh, I'm a nice guy. I served in the military. He says, here's how much I care. I was in Afghanistan helping soldiers write their wills. That's a way of saying without telling, it's showing and not telling that he cares. I mean, how many lawyers are going to go to Afghanistan and help soldiers write their wills? Another lawyer I had worked with, and I did not work with this estates lawyer, I should say, but another lawyer, an immigration lawyer, has a story about how he took a plane to another state to get a person who was wrongly imprisoned out of jail, and he spent the entire weekend working with the warden to get extra time. All this, that tells you how much he cares. That's a passionate advocate archetype, and it's rare among service people. You have to be really careful if you choose that archetype. One of the more common ones would be a role model. The role model has the promise, I did it. I'm just like you. So if I did it, you can do it. That's a very common one among life coaches, for example, or coaches for health coaches, someone who works with diabetics or works with cancer patients. That's a very good archetype for them. And they tell stories about themselves and how they struggled, but not just how they struggled, how they overcame obstacles, how they mm-hmm. are where they are today. Now, I am what we call an educator archetype, which means that I have a promise that I have a lot of knowledge that I can share with you. And if you apply the knowledge I have, I can help you improve your business. I can help you. And if you're not a business coach, if you're you can use this in any field. It's sure. really what you are building on is my knowledge. And that's what I share. Now, my clients don't want to hear a lot about me as a person because that's not my promise. That's not what I'm talking about. They don't want to have a lot of strong language from me. They want knowledge. So every email I send out, I try to include something they can take away that gives them some knowledge. Ideally, the best kind of content for me to write as an educator is to create aha moments, because that's what convinces clients to say, oh, wow, if I want more of that. So those are some of the examples. And that's why a lot of times people trip up when someone says, oh, tell a story. Okay. They say, well, tell a story about yourself. Well, it's not always a good idea to tell a story about yourself. For instance, there's someone who does training, a unique, very special form of training to build a website with WordPress. And she has a special software she uses. It's totally unique and totally special to her. You can't get it anywhere else. And she solves a problem that is very painful and very difficult for people creating a website, especially when you've had problems with webmasters. She is an innovator archetype, and she rarely talks about herself because people don't care. What they want to know is, look, this is something new and different. You've got a big promise. What they want to know is, can you convince me that it works? Because anything new, we always have resistance. So her entire marketing is built around stories of success, of firsthand, of testimonials, of even showing samples of before and after, because she wants to show people that it works. She does not tell hard luck stories. She does not talk about how she was up all night with a sick daughter or a sick cat, which is what a role model might do. So they're very different examples. And this is something that only applies to businesses where the brand is you. Because someone says, well, what's Coca-Cola's first archetype? I don't know. I don't care. They have a big agency. They don't need me. They've got their own brand. And it may not work because they're branding chemicals and water, and mm-hmm. you're not. And I think that's very important for people to understand when they set out to market themselves.
Well, I think the types of businesses you serve and that you've been talking about have a very different relationship yeah. with the customer, right, mm-hmm. than a big conglomerate or a big international brand. And that's to say that there actually is a relationship, a real relationship, as opposed to, you know, sort of a figurative one. And you spoke to it in you've mentioned four of the five archetypes here. I guess we should leave the last one a mystery so that people can go and grab you know your information on archetypes. But as you were talking, I was very curious to hear how you apply the story of, you know, what you talked about this with the educator and the innovator, where it's not the business owner story.
Right.
And I'm thinking oftentimes, particularly a brand new business where they don't necessarily have the story to share yet, or they haven't personally had the experience, there's also the angle of telling the prospect's story. And yeah. so I'm curious how that figures into the way that you approach story.
Yeah. Well, I tell people if they're just starting out, to come up with an example of a success story that a prospect will have. I mean, you never want to lie. You never want to say this really happened, but you could say, here's the type of story my client would tell if they were successful. In fact, when I write a website, we start out with stories like that of what the client experiences are. And when you start out for the first time, sometimes you have to experiment with an archetype and see. I've seen a lot of people think they want to be role models, and they realize very quickly that this is not working with them. They don't feel comfortable with that, or it's not working with them. But usually from the beginning, you can kind of get a sense of how you want to share your message. Mm-hmm. And usually when you start out, if you are a service business, you're not ready to do marketing in a strong way, you know, really go all out until you had at least a few clients that you were even practice clients, and yeah. we can work with them and you can go from there. But it is, you have a good point. A lot of times people don't know what their archetype is when they start, or they think they get confused. But what's been really interesting is I have followed successful marketers. And when I look at them, of course, they don't know about archetypes. They don't care about archetypes. They're doing just fine as they are. But usually when you analyze their marketing, they fit one of those archetypes very consistently on a subconscious level, even to the point of emails. I was just astounded. I decided one day to look at emails subject lines, but also how people sign off. Something as mm-hmm. simple as, how do you sign off your emails? Okay. And how do you sign off on your emails? I know I've gotten some, but I haven't paid attention.
So my sign off, you are on my email list. In fact, that's how you ended up, you know, here is you replied to one of my emails. But my sign off is to your success.
Aha. That means you are very possibly a role model, I would guess. I'm willing to bet it may not be, because some people are inconsistent, but most role models sign up to your success, to mm-hmm. your sweet success, to your permanent success, very common. And a lot of their message is that, you know, from what I've seen of your emails, you do bring a lot of yourself into your emails. And that may be a case of where you may be, No, and I don't know why this works, but it seems to be very common. And educators, I almost always say something like, until next time, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Innovators, I have no idea why this is. Almost every innovator signs their email, cheers. The only exception is Ian Brody, who is British, who signs his email, cheers, because he's British, and yeah. He's an educator. So, but it's shockingly consistent. If I were still in academia, I would write a paper about it. But for now, I observe that. And a lot of times, role models will end their they will say to your success, so they'll do that. But there's another archetype, the one we didn't mention, that says hugs or love or kiss. Those are very different archetypes. So one of the things I sometimes tell people is, you know, if you just change your sign off, you might have a stronger impact. And after I came up with this, I really didn't know how to sign my emails. And then I said, wait a minute, this is the best one for me. So I don't know if you are, will you consider yourself a role model?
You know, I don't know that I would necessarily, because as you were talking about yourself being an educator, I was reflecting, you know, a lot of that on me as well, and thinking, gosh, that's at least for this email list. I don't serve this audience with a service or a business. I have some courses that I, you know, make mostly for my own clients to give them, and I also sell them to people on my email list, but that's not my business, right? Okay. So all I'm doing is really sharing information because I enjoy sharing information.
Oh, okay. So you may not fit the pattern there, because this is designed for people who are offering a service.
Right.
And so if you're not offering a service, I can't make any claims about the archetype. So
okay, well, I'm glad that there's a reason for my inconsistency then. by the way, you've used that word consistency, I think I counted at least three or four times. And I think that there is something to be said about the importance of consistency, right? Where you know, whether you mentioned, you know, as professional service providers, we are usually researched a little bit before we're approached. And so consistency, yep, as our public image, whether it's somebody checking us out on our website or going and checking us out on LinkedIn or going wherever, there's consistency across the board there, but also consistency in what we're saying, how we're saying it, to whom we're saying it, and I imagine some other things. And
the stories we tell, the stories need to be consistent. For example, if I start, every so often I'll slip and say something about myself and does not go over well. If you are a certain archetype, and again, I don't want to be too fanatical about it because people do break the rules, but it generally it does help you with consistency, because you know what kind of stories you should be telling. So sometimes, for example, an innovator might seem to be telling a story about themselves, but it's really because they are using that as an illustration of what they do. Or if I tell a story about myself, it's only to illustrate a point that I want to make. It's not to get to know me better, because if you're certain archetypes, your clients don't want to get to know you better. If there's a slight change over time as they get to know you, you know, hear from you, they may get curious.
Yes.
But it's not, I think it's a mistake to believe that people want to get to know you. I mean, I have a financial advisor. I have no idea why he became a financial advisor. I don't care. I have no idea. I mean, I know because he was recommended by one of his relatives, so I know a little bit about his family, but I have no idea what his hobbies are or what he's like as a person. All I know is that he's a really, really good financial advisor, and all I want from him is information and facts, and maybe information about what's trending in the market. I don't want to know his family history. Now, a lot of people are different. Some people really do want to know their financial, their personal history. But I think for the most part, we overemphasize our personal side in many cases.
Well, let's dig into this a little bit deeper, because I think that both approaches could be used to end up in a specific place, right? If you have a goal to develop a client base that is very interested in the outcome of your service versus a goal to develop a client base that has, you know, a similar worldview to you, as an example, right? And so there's different ways that you could play that out. Can you talk about, you know, how you might approach each of those?
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's probably why a lot of life coaches are role model archetypes because they come in with the message, and they people want to know them personally. They want to know something about them. They might want to know that this particular life coach was a cancer survivor. That is meaningful to them. But that's a really good point. And on the other hand, let's go back to that woman who has a way to build websites. I don't think anybody really cares about her as a cancer, whether she's a cancer survivor or not. All they want to know is, will her website solution work? Now, maybe after they've gotten to know her better, they do get curious. And I'm actually getting into that now, where over time, I think people change the way they relate to their audiences, especially if they're successful. Because as you get to know someone, you want to know more, especially if you see how successful they are. I mean, think about, for example, we just had the Super Bowl, and where I live, Philadelphia, we're very big on Super Bowl. So when this particular quarterback did really well, all of a sudden it's like, wow, he's a great quarterback. Now let's find out about his personal life. Where did he go to school? What did he do? What does he eat for breakfast? But before he became successful, I don't think anybody cared. He was just another guy on the field. So right. In many situations, you want to know first what they are good at. I mean, I like to say know, like, and trust. There's a reason no comes first in many cases. And there are exceptions. And I think the exceptions are people who brand themselves or position themselves more as role models. And there are people in every field who want to relate personally first. And they will gravitate to those marketers who position themselves this way, who talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. So you may have that. But I think for the most part, you have to really think about what you're selling, what you're offering. And when you tell a story, you want to think, what is the purpose of the story? Why am I telling it? I mean, there are people who are telling stories, but I am convinced they really should be telling those stories to their therapist, and they are too cheap to pay for a therapist. So they're telling their audience of strangers about their lives. And it's like, you know, save that for your life coach. Save that for your business coach. I mean, even in business, they'll say, I have this, I'm so frustrated with people who do X, Y, and Z. Fine. Save that for your business coach. If you're going to tell that to your audience, why are you telling this story? What is the point? What do you want them to take away from this before you tell the story? Mm-hmm. If you just tell a story out there, you have what I call cringeworthy moments. I had a whole podcast on this, that people can tell a story and think, oh, this is a great story. You look back on it 6 months later, oh no, why did I do that? I mean, that's the whole Prince Harry and Meghan thing. That's the ultimate case of telling a story, because you feel good telling that story without thinking of the impact and the consequence of that story. And people do it all the time. I get emails in my inbox, you know, about an underwear malfunction or an embarrassing moment. It's like, do you really want people to see you in that light? Because you cannot untell a story. That's very important. If you tell a story about an embarrassing moment, that's what they're going to remember forever. Mm-hmm. And do you want that to be what comes to mind when your name comes up? I don't think so.
There's a bunch that I want to unpack there, but I want to go in a slightly different direction. I recall, we've been talking about stories and stories involving words, but I think stories also incorporate imagery. And I remember years ago, I used to have, I was very uncomfortable with putting myself out there, which is one of the things we're encouraging a lot of our listeners to do with what we've been talking about. And there was a guy who I had seen do a presentation about how he just decided, you know what, I'm gonna get out there and put my personality out there and put my image on all of my marketing materials. And I said, okay, I think I'm gonna try that too. And I did. Now, I'm a silly guy, and I have a very dry sense of humor that doesn't necessarily come across until after you get to know me a little bit. But the images that I put out there were a little silly. They were a little goofy. They were me making, you know, some funny faces or some, you know, sort of reactions that people would go, what the heck is, you know, he reacting to? And then they would see me in person or read my material, and there would be an inconsistency. And that was, the image was the real me.
Yeah.
I had to actually change the way I was communicating and you know, make myself a little bit, you know, more clever and a little bit mm-hmm. more, you know, make some snide remarks here and there just to actually show up, show that I was who they were seeing. And so I wonder, you know, how you can help somebody identify inconsistencies like the one that I realized I had and then adjust accordingly.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you brought up a couple things there. First of all, imagery. Yes, I say in stories, we paint word pictures. We definitely create images in stories. And I have a whole course on that with selling stories. You have images of the hero of the place. You definitely put people into your story. That is absolutely valid. And when you also pointed out, when you start out, you don't think about the image. When I started, I had a website about career change. And I said, oh, I've always been a free spirit. When I feel like going somewhere, I go. And people would say, wait a minute, it sounds like you're one of those people who leaps without a net. You're really a risk taker. And actually, the truth was, I did make a lot of moves, but I always had money. Most of my moves were paid for. And I quickly got rid of that story in a hurry because it was not serving me. And sometimes you have to do that. And some, you know, people will encourage you to tell bizarre stories about yourself or to show that side of you. One of the worst examples, I bring this up as the ultimate worst example I've ever seen. A marketing coach went to a webinar or a seminar, and he got advised to talk about his personal problems. And he talked about getting depressed and thinking about committing suicide and hitting bottom. And I'm like, no, you never want to share that. I mean, unless you're a life coach working with other people, maybe. But he was a business coach. And unfortunately, ever since I see that, I see his name, and all I can think of is that he was depressed and hitting bottom. That is, I mean, someone told him to do that. That was a major, major mistake. So if someone like came to me and said, well, here's all my material, what we do, first of all, we sit down and say, okay, well, with most people, we look at your archetype, and usually that doesn't take very long. Sometimes you have a choice. You could be one or the other. Sometimes you have to change. I had a client who had been a social worker, and she was a role model, a very strong role model, because she worked with people who had a certain type of problem. Then she became a trainer of social workers, and she could not use that. Now she was an educator archetype. So we talk about how you can be consistent throughout your website. Usually when we talk about the website, all these other things bubble up, and we get a very clear message of what you should do. So I actually tried that. Not everybody listens. I had one guy was in the healthcare industry, and he had a totally ridiculous image of himself waving and something. And I tried to say, have you thought about that? Oh, I like that. I think it's cute. I'm like, all right. And he did not want to listen. He did not become a client. He did not stay very long, because I don't really want to work with people who don't want to listen at all. I mean, we can disagree, and we can come to, you have this too, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But if someone says, I totally reject everything you say, like, why are we here? Let's move on. So, that's how I would start, is the archetype will give you consistency, and it's not perfect. It doesn't fit 100%, but it gives you a compass to use when you're building your business. And it's like a container or a foundation for your brand and your message.
All right. Well, I think we've teased people long enough. We probably should tell them where they can learn more about the archetypes. And I think you said that there's even a quiz that they can go through to reveal their archetype. So where can we find this?
This is easy. It's kathygoodwin.com. My website is my name, Kathy with a C. Goodwin has two O's, kathygoodwin.com/arch, A-R-C-H, for short for archetype. So this is really easy, kathygoodwin.com/arch, and you'll get a free download. And I also list the five archetypes right on the page. We haven't talked about one of them, but we'll, because most people who come to me are not that archetype. So if you are that archetype, usually you feel like you already know everything. So they're not. But but it's good to know that, because you recognize, and we could go, I could talk, well, I have talked about archetypes for hours, but yep. I hope I've given you an indication of how you can use them in your business.
Well, I am not that archetype. I do not sign off loves and hugs, and I don't think I know everything. But I am thrilled to have had the opportunity to chat with you. We'll have, of course, that link, KathyGoodwin.com/arch, as well as a link over to your strategic storytelling podcast and your main website, too, on the show notes for this episode. Kathy Goodwin, thank you so much for hanging out with me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, too.
Indeed. Folks, you have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, please, by all means, share this with them. Until next time, my name's David Baer, and this is More Perfect Marketing. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.